This is the Crypto Economy, where I read all about Bitcoin so that you don't have to. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. We are jumping in today, part two of the Bitcoin Times by the Amber Crew and Alexander Svetsky. So again, this is part two. If you haven't listened to yesterday's episode, we are jumping right in the middle of this. So definitely listen to yesterday's episode first if you haven't. But without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into part two, starting with the section BOS, the new monetary operating system. Bitcoin is a new monetary network, not a payments technology. Bitcoin is the first time we've combined money as a unit with money as a network into one thing. More on this here. A link to the article, Why Bitcoin Matters. And because it's so different, it's hard to wrap our heads around it. The problem is further compounded by the fact that nobody really understands money, but most people get payments, which is move money, especially because it's been handled digitally for the last 20 to 30 years now. To understand this better, we need to understand Bitcoin's real innovation and, in the process, separate money from payments. As we've established, immutability is derivative of cost. It's this cost of validating transactions and maintaining the network of distributed but consistent ledgers that gives something like Bitcoin its immutability. Bitcoin's true innovation was an autonomous network that can establish the authenticity and validity of the state of the broadly distributed ledger. The only advantage of using this type of costly infrastructure is for actions that require a large degree of trust and assurance, those that should never fail, and those that should not be easily reversed. There are a limited set of these, i.e., every transaction or state chain that happens in the world does not need this. The world works pretty fine right now. Could we make it better by stamping a net state to something immutable once a week, once a month? Yes, definitely. But every transaction? No way. It's just overkill. Bitcoin is the most secure and immutable network that exists, not because of its, quote, blockchain, but because of its elaborate and expensive authentication mechanism. Your laptop has the ability to process hundreds of thousands of transactions a minute. That process is trivial. Payments is trivial. Autonomous distributed validation is the innovation, and this is where people go astray. People don't get Bitcoin because they perceive it as some form of payments technology or some blockchain mechanism that they don't really understand, for moving funny internet money, which they also don't understand. That is not what Bitcoin is. Bitcoin is a complete reinvention of money, the world's oldest social contract and society's most fundamental layer. To understand its impact, you need to have a broad understanding of both networks and money. The problem is, most people don't. In fact, nobody really understands what money is because it's not taught anywhere. Few can define it, whether they're in banking, finance, technology, fintech, capital markets, and especially payments. So they apply their biases to it and completely miss the point. It's like discussing the structure of the Egyptian pyramids with your pet goldfish. The goldfish simply lacks the context. Money requires an understanding of our evolution as a species, anthropology, biology, social engineering, psychology, game theory, and what I like to call the societal stack. Discussing this is well outside the scope of this paper, but I'll touch on an area which I hope will give you a reference point, the societal stack in a subsequent section. The complexity of network dynamics doesn't make the job of understanding Bitcoin any easier. I will touch on this further in a dedicated section, but suffice it to say, networks are just as foreign to our intuitive understanding of the world as the pyramids are to the goldfish. The track record of the experts adds weight to this. Back to payments versus money. Bitcoin is not a payments technology. It's fundamentally a reinvention of money. Like the motor vehicle was a reinvention of transport, not a better horse and cart. Same as the internet, it reinvented the fabric upon which we communicate. It reinvented the way information is transported. It did not push more, richer, or smarter data through the phone network's infrastructure. It used that infrastructure as physical on-ramps, but the internet is not the hardware. It's so much larger. That's why it swallowed them up and is the foundation upon which the majority of today's society operates. And what's more, the internet is only picking up speed. Bitcoin is where the internet was in the late 80s, still largely misunderstood. People are still arguing about the speed of payments. They don't realize that payments as we know them today will completely transform. The same way we're no longer talking about the quality of the phone call and number of phone calls this, quote, internet thing will support, we will see new conversations emerge for what can be done on Bitcoin. The world is changing. The internet was only the beginning. Bitcoin is the next chapter. Bitcoin and the internet, a comparison. Understanding where economic activity congregates is hard. It's hard because people are blinded by their biases. Their egos get in the way, and instead of focusing on what can be built on top, where the real opportunity is, they're focusing on owning the network or layer. But here's a revelation for you. What made the internet special is that the phone companies didn't own it. The reason AOL failed was that it was the complex, managed corporate solution with all the bells and whistles that assumed what people wanted in this new, quote, information superhighway. They learned the hard way that no amount of market data or corporate experience and foresight can predict what a new communication modality for the commons would become, because just as free markets always trump centrally governed ones, open networks are a requirement for free speech, and that's exactly where all the innovation goes. Now, AOL wasn't the worst of them. At least they were trying to reimagine how this new communication network might function and the things it may enable us to do. The phone companies, they were the funny ones. They controlled all form of non-face-to-face communication at that point, and their question about the internet was, how many phone calls will this internet thing do? Sound familiar? They assumed what the internet was going to be used for, i.e. phone calls and video conferencing, based upon their current biases and problem sets. This is low-level skeuomorphic thinking and design. The internet, on the other hand, assumed nothing, and it won because it had the basic, robust, open building blocks upon which all the innovation actually occurred. The same thing will happen with Bitcoin, or if I steal a term from Andreas, the internet of money. Why? Because strong, simple, stable foundations will always work best. That is just physics. Quote, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. Gandhi. And if we look at the internet, the story is no different. 1. The phone companies first dismissed it because they measured its capability through the same lens via which they measured themselves, number of phone calls, quality of the phone call. 2. When they saw it taking off, they asked, quote, how do we buy this internet thing? 3. When they realized they couldn't do that, they tried to replicate it. They built AOL. And four. And then the internet won. And here we are. Those phone companies have merely become on-ramps and off-ramps for the internet, something that's larger than all of them combined. They wanted to own it and have it dependent on them, but they are now dependent on it. All of their services now run on the internet. So not only did the internet win, but an entire infrastructure inversion took place. And if that wasn't enough, this inversion paved the way for new innovation and new opportunities. Opportunities the phone companies could not capitalize on, and as a result, opened the door for new global giants to emerge. Giants who built on the internet. I don't know about you, but there's an eerie similarity to Bitcoin as a money and monetary network and the current financial institutions. And whilst I know it sounds far-fetched to think that today's financial institutions will one day be on-ramps for Bitcoin, remember that 30 years ago it was also completely insane to think that the phone companies would merely be connection points for the internet. This is happening right now. Whilst the silly people are trying to reinvent the wheel, the smart people are building on Bitcoin. The Dorseys, Starks, Lopps, Rochards of the world get it. This is the future. Instant, unstoppable routing of value, not just information. Inversion and opportunity. This kind of inversion happens once in a lifetime. It's like getting on the ground floor of Amazon in 1995. Bitcoin is the opportunity that everyone is looking for, and whilst it's staring us right in the face, we're all running around yelling blockchain, trying to fit circles into squares. What you can't replicate about Bitcoin is that it's an uncensorable, unstoppable monetary network whose growth compounds with every unit of value that's stored on there. Bitcoin's long-term future doesn't lie in it just being a speculative asset, but lies in its network being used as the common fabric upon which value transfer occurs. If you can anchor into that fabric the same way as we do with the internet for information packets to be routed, then you can get all the benefits of a decentralized, immutable, secure financial network without all the downsides. For example, slow speed, and longer term, volatility. This will all happen in layers, and the layers are where all the commercial opportunity exists, not in trying to build and sell a new version of Bitcoin. That might last for a while, and because nobody really understands anything in this space, people will let their greed get the better of them and buy into pointless narratives to make the next Bitcoin or the next pot of gold. Good luck with that. Good luck with your information superhighway that nobody is going to use and that you will need to maintain. We are building on the living, breathing, autonomous network which started off worth nothing and is today securely storing almost $100 billion worth. The Lindy effect will only continue to compound here, and its self-reinforcing effect will only get stronger. The result is more capital held, which in turn strengthens not only the trust in the network, but the incentive for more validators to expend real-world cost to maintain and verify this ledger, which in turn makes it more robust, more decentralized, more secure, and more immutable. And so it continues. I scratch my head and wonder why one would want to compete with that. These not-so-intelligent, short-sighted, and non-creative people are all wasting time trying to reinvent the wheel while the smart ones are out there building the car. They're putting the wheel to use. It's the story of the internet all over again. Whilst AOL set out to rebuild the internet in their eyes, Google and Hotmail took those building blocks, recognized it was the most robust network to build on, and then created useful applications, which in turn made the internet more useful, and in the process, changed the world. Today, we have a monetary network that has all the ingredients upon which we can build a secure, modern, digital financial infrastructure. The smart people, the true visionaries, know that and are doing just that. The deluded, greedy, and those with a veneer of an understanding who've bought into an ideology or concepts they don't understand will run around getting money from people for a while, but it's a game that's losing steam. The future is being built here, on Bitcoin, with Lightning. Blockchains and DLTs are hubcaps applied in vain by those trying to make a faster carriage. Bitcoin is the motor vehicle. And although the motor vehicle was initially used by crooks, was slow and really hard to use on roads built for horses, it ultimately drove the transformation of society, and transport was built around it. I could pull similarities, metaphors, and analogies all day, but I think you get the point. Network fundamentals. Networks are another inherently non-intuitive area for humans to grasp. Throughout history, we've been extraordinarily poor at predicting the growth of networks, especially those which become a public commons, such as electricity, the telephone, the internet, and now, Bitcoin. Quote, "When the Paris Exhibition of 1878 closes, electric light will close with it, and no more will be heard of it." End quote. Erasmus Wilson, Oxford professor. Quote, "The Americans have need of the telephone, but we do not. We have plenty of messenger boys." End quote. Sir William Preece, Chief Engineer, British Post Office, 1878. And my favorite, quote, "The growth of the internet will slow drastically as the flaw in Metcalfe's law becomes apparent. Most people have nothing to say to each other. By 2005 or so, it will become clear that the internet's impact on the economy has been no greater than the fax machines." End quote. Paul Krugman, winner of the Nobel Prize in Economics, written in 1998. Why? How do the so-called experts get it so wrong? There's a number of reasons, a lot to do with biases, and a big one to do with how we've evolved. I delve deeper into this in the following article, a link to Homo sapiens, evolution, money, and Bitcoin. Although the cliff notes are as follows. Humans evolved in a world defined by our more linear sensory perceptions. Growing up in the savannah, you had to know roughly how long it would take to run X distance in order to steal some food, protect your family, or outrun a predator. As a result, we're great at estimating how far 30 linear steps will take us, roughly 30 meters. 30 exponential steps is a completely different story. That's 1 billion meters, which is a distance we can't easily fathom. Peter Diamandis and Ray Kurzweil really popularized both this term and the example. When we encounter something that moves exponentially or via some network effect, we find it hard to make accurate, intuitive estimates. We generally project linearly, whether over or underestimating. Note, network effects are similar in nature to exponential, just not as pronounced. The key takeaway is that in the early stages, their progress is imperceptible. Network growth seems to move slow as the initial base of connections is established. But once it hits a critical mass, an inflection point, the momentum to continue is almost unstoppable, barring a catastrophic failure of the network itself. This inflection point is probably not a point, more like a period, and without hindsight, it's impossible to measure and therefore forecast, but as a rule of thumb, or a heuristic, you can probably bet that it's the point where people give up and think it's not going to work because of the lack of surface-level results, that a functional network, which has continued growing its node base, takes off. Figure 4 above is not meant to be mathematically accurate, but designed to illustrate the following point. We overestimate in the short term, Bitcoin will take over the world. We underestimate in the long term. Bitcoin is dead. It's been 10 years. Note, exponential and quadratic curves look similar in those early stages, but they are different. The following diagram and example will help you better understand how networks, also known as quadratic growth, can really accelerate beyond a certain point. The illustration just shows just how fast the number of connections grows as you increase the number of nodes, and it's got a little chart underneath it as an example. So when you have one node, you have zero connections. When you have two nodes, you have one connection. When you have 10 nodes, you have 90 different connections. And then 100, you have 9,900 different connections. That's a lot of connections. And by the time you get somewhere between 1,000 and 10,000, it's taken off. Lightning has currently around 3,500 visible nodes as of the 18th of February 2019, and likely the same amount, if not more, that are private. Something to think about. Dumb versus smart. There is another reason why the internet won out as the primary communications network and not the private consortiums networks like AOL or the telecommunications companies who dominated the communications infrastructure for 100 years prior. It's because the base layer needs to be dumb, or in other words, basic and robust for it to work best. The internet was built on a few basic packet switching and routing protocols, which did what they did very simply but very well, and created the most robust communications network our species has ever seen. As a result, it incentivized the rest of the world to build on top of it. Why? Because when you have a solid, robust foundation, you can abstract any function and you can deliver services which can later interact and integrate with other services. This cumulative effect is another function of how networks, such as the internet and now Bitcoin, accelerate, further entrench themselves, and dominate. All of the economic activity will go to where it can maximize its yield, and the more complex and all-inclusive you try to make a foundational network, especially something as broad as communication or money, the less room there is for free market or open innovation, and the more of a threat there is from competing networks to develop something that's more basic and robust that the collective can build on top of. Blockchains are dead because they're either useless or contain unnecessary complexity. Their two major selling points, security and immutability, are not some inherent magical trait that emerges thanks to their technical architecture or their segregation of data. The only networks that have this are open, public, game-theoretically sound networks, such as Bitcoin, and perhaps a few others. Although Bitcoin has a significant advantage, and in the game of networks, when you have the lead, combined with the serendipitous beginnings, the stubborn minority, the most infrastructure, and the best minds working on it, the probabilities of catching up, let alone keeping up, fall exponentially. I posit that it's too late to catch Bitcoin, at least this century. It's time to double down on the bet and not wonder why you got left behind. And for those of you who think, quote, no bank is ever going to use Bitcoin as a settlement layer, just remember, in the 90s, every bank was saying they would never do any form of banking on the internet. Times change, and you can either play catch-up or you can lead. All right, I really need a break real quick. Let me go grab a drink. We'll hit our sponsor and jump back in on the next section titled Investing in Networks. Investing in Networks. Another reason why blockchain has and continues to fail is because its focus is on being a proprietary technology. There is no network effect in building private blockchains or DLTs. That's called incremental, or in a lot of cases, phantom innovation. The real investment opportunity and innovation lies in the development of networks such as Airbnb, Uber, App Store, Facebook, and the network which was the game changer for everyone, the internet. If you look at society, you find that the substrata on which everything is built is communication, information, and language. The first layer that sits on top of that is actually money. Most people don't appreciate the importance that money plays in the evolution of our species and our ability to build this thing called society. I'll touch on money briefly in a dedicated section later so that you can appreciate its gravity. For now, suffice it to say, it's fundamental to the operation of everything in society and is core to our ability to cooperate and collaborate as humans, Homo sapiens specifically. Currently, the only digital monetary medium that is anti-fragile, robust, and secure with a truly scarce unit of account is Bitcoin. Is that not a network worth investing in or building on top of? If you want to be an investor that invests in incremental innovation that will just be taken over tomorrow, you'll be continually looking for the next best thing. The alternative is to use the Peter Thiel, Reid Hoffman approach. Look for networks that are gaining momentum, that have a dedicated, stubborn minority, which despite bad press, continue to grow, and you'll find the 1% which change the world. As Mark Andreessen said years ago, software is eating the world, and it still is. As an investor, you need to decide whether you want to be a part of the blockbuster world or whether you want to be streaming in the new world. Innovations that benefit from time and network growth only get stronger as more activity happens on them. Email helped bring more activity to the internet. Lightning and simple multi-sig time lock and judge smart contracts will help to further advance Bitcoin's network effects. The digital neobanks are out there trying to put lipstick on a pig by making an old infrastructure more modern, and it's difficult. It's like trying to make a horse and carriage faster. Messing around with legacy banking, whilst we have something like Bitcoin, is madness. Bitcoin is the only secure global digital settlement network upon which real digital and neobanks can be built with far greater integrity, complexity, and transparency. In the same way we didn't know what sort of applications were going to emerge by liberating information and communication with the internet, so too we have no idea the magnitude of changes and innovations that will emerge when we liberate money and value exchange in a digital world. No, this is not an overnight transformation. But make no mistake about it. The next Amazon, Google, and Netflixes of the world are being built right now on the next great public global network, Bitcoin. Lightning. Quote, whilst blockchain people are arguing about 1,000 or 100,000 transactions per second, and in the process compromising the security and immutability of their networks, a Lightning-type network anchored to something immutable like Bitcoin, has the potential to do tens of billions of transactions per second and compromise nothing. End quote. Alexander Svetsky. What is Lightning? Giving it the explanation and time it deserves is out of the scope of this paper, but I'll attempt to give you enough of an understanding to go further down the rabbit hole with. Imagine a network where each of the participants are not only route users, but also route operators, where every participant becomes a node that strengthens and broadens the network for not only themselves, but for everybody using it. The best analogy I can think of is the internet, once again. The internet really exploded when we became not only consumers of content, but also creators and routers of this data and content. Testament to this explosion is the company which arguably capitalized on this the most. Facebook is barely 15 years old and is one of the largest in the world. It gave everyone a forum to consume, create, and share content. In other words, everyone was a node that made Facebook more valuable, and not just in relation to its market cap. What happens when you apply that same concept of read, write, route to money and payments? In short, it changes the game. Whilst not entirely accurate, Bitcoin is like the internet. One transformed information, the other money. And Lightning is a little like Facebook, in that it makes money a content type that everyone can collectively participate in. Money has never had that kind of fluidity. This is a high level of what Lightning represents. But, you might say, quote, wait a minute, not everyone can route money. They're not a bank. How can we trust them? That's where Bitcoin comes in. Lightning is technically able to be applied or anchored onto other networks, but its maximum utility comes from doing so on a network that gives the highest guarantee of immutability. That's the entire point, and how we unlock Lightning's potential. If we can refer back to something that has prioritized security, stability, resistance to censorship, and shutdown, then you can begin to really abstract and build financial complexity on top of it, without worrying about the potential of error, compromise, fraud, or failure. Bitcoin plus Lightning is where the future is at. Lightning enables 1. Instant payments. Because we're not worrying about block confirmation times. Payment speed is measured in milliseconds to seconds. It is truly peer-to-peer and as fast as data can move. 2. Scale. When all participants are also nodes, you don't get the congestion we have in today's archaic, centralized payment networks. You get true scale, capable of millions to billions of transactions per second across the network. This blows away any high-speed blockchain or any other legacy payment rails by many orders of magnitude. 3. Low cost. Non-custodial micropayments, for example, pay per action or click, are truly possible at fractions of cents. This is foundation for a set of use cases yet to emerge. 4. Security. By anchoring to a source of truth, aka Bitcoin, with simple, robust smart contracts, one can ensure the integrity of the second layer without recording them on the chain via a complex version of netting. How does Lightning work? Lightning is a second layer technology. By using the native smart contract scripting language of a network, such as Bitcoin, to anchor or connect to, it's possible to create a secure second-layer network of participants who are able to process and route transactions at high volume and high speed. For example, Avocado and Toast decide they want to transact, lots of times. Instead of bothering everyone on the core network and having every single validator on the core network have to record their transactions, they decide to open up what's called a payment channel. Think of it like putting some money on your transaction account. They can then transact between each other, back and forth as much as they want, each time netting off against the prior transaction. After a certain period of aggregating these transactions and updating the final net state, they could choose to close out the channel by broadcasting the final net result to the underlying network, for example, Bitcoin, and settle. It's important to note that this final net entry can be closed out at any time by either party, without any trust or custodianship, by broadcasting the most recent version to the blockchain. Closing a channel is also how the network deals with cases of attempted fraud or bad acting. The last valid signed set of transactions between both parties wins. And there are some incentive-disincentive rules that help to ensure it's in everyone's economic self-interest to do the right thing. In other words, attempt to defraud the other user, but last signature shows otherwise, you lose the funds you committed to the channel. This is all similar to how legal contracts function. One does not go to court every time a contract is made. That's analogous to doing everything on the blockchain. Only in the event of non-cooperation is the court involved, and by making the transactions and scripts parsable and thus anchoring to the underlying network, These smart contracts can be enforced and the result settled. The potential. A payment channel between two participants is just the beginning. It is a building block for a larger network. In fact, the network only forms when numerous payment channels join to form a web. In this way, two participants who are not directly connected can transact with each other. Let's say Dingus wants to pay Pingus. He can still do it, even if he doesn't have a direct connection or a payment channel with him, but as long as Wingus from earlier can connect them via a chain, i.e. route. The exciting part is that as the network grows, you won't necessarily even need to set up a dedicated channel to send funds to a certain person. Instead, you will be able to send payment to someone using channels that you've already connected with. The system will automatically find the shortest route. By connecting an entire network of these two-party ledger entries, it's possible to find payment paths across the network, similar to how packets are routed on the internet. As all the pieces of the puzzle come together, one starts to see the magnitude of this innovation. This is how everything else in nature works, along with the functional systems of cooperation we've built throughout the millennia. You abstract the small. You settle what you need to, whether that be at closure or on disagreement. In fact, it's a big part of how modern banking evolved, because it's more efficient. The difference and beauty with Bitcoin is that you can't influence or manipulate it. Remember, immutability as a service. So it will be the ultimate arbiter and settle as per the original rules. It's time to move to a new model where the arbiter and settlement function is digital and owned by the commons, not by the few. The future is on Lightning. What could the future hold? Aside from the potential of doing billions of transactions per second, seeing as speed is what everyone wants, and transforming payments and value transfer from things that happen at a time and place to something that streams over time and space, perhaps something a little easier to imagine is the launch of a Bitcoin bank. One where anyone, anywhere in the world could set up an account in seconds and begin participating in global commerce. Where all reserves are held and denominated in Bitcoin, on Bitcoin, and the organization can be held 100% accountable because it's all transparent and able to be queried. Could we open up the ability to lend, borrow, spend, save, trade, and interact globally without worrying about exchange rates, inflation, and manipulation? I don't know. Maybe. Or maybe I'm thinking way too small. I don't know. What I do know is that the real innovation is yet to come, and those innovations, like Facebook and cat videos on the internet, will not be skeuomorphic. They will not be something we can predict or even imagine today. Myself and my team at Amber are making inroads in the new world and will continue to be at the cutting edge. But we are well and truly at the beginning, and all we can do is keep pushing the envelope. The societal stack. Society on top of money, on top of communication. The lower down the stack, the more rigid, fixed, and robust it must be. The definition of a strong foundation. Quote, "Nothing great was ever built on shit foundations." Alex Svetsky. To understand money and Bitcoin, we need to go back in time and go down the societal stack. It's only when you understand the foundations of everything we see around us that things start to make sense. As per the diagram above, you'll note we have communication as the lower foundation, or the basis for everything. I like to call it the societal substrata. Money as a mechanism via which we can exchange, specialize, measure, collaborate, cooperate, and organize sits directly on top. Everything else I've called society then sits above it. Communication is the prerequisite for cooperation, which in turn is the predicate for society. And if we split communication into two broad categories, the lower foundation is the biological ability to communicate. We share this same ability with every other species on the planet that we know of. The upper layer is Homo sapiens' unique ability to communicate on abstract concepts and ideas. This is unique to us, and it's this layer that allows for broad-based coordination. Shared fictions, as Yuval Harari termed it in his seminal piece, Sapiens. In communicating about fantasies or imaginary concepts and fictions, we are able to hack our biology and attain the trust required for us to cooperate in numbers that exceed our biological limits. Or another way to phrase it, we are the only species able to cooperate both flexibly and in large numbers. This is all thanks to the stories we tell each other and choose to collectively believe. Why is this important? This unique ability has allowed us to build the complexity in society that we often take for granted today. It has allowed us to cooperate in numbers that exceed what's called Dunbar's number. As a result, we've evolved from some insignificant ape in the middle of the food chain to the apex species at the top of the food chain who rule the world and have created what scientists now call the anthroposphere, the layer of the planetary ecosystem associated with us. This is an extraordinary feat made possible, at least as far as we understand, by our ability to hack trust, as described above. For those of you who think you might not be familiar with any of these shared fictions, here's a few examples that the world we live in today was built on and that you buy into daily. Gods, kings, religion, corporations, laws, nations, human rights, government. And what's the most important and long-standing shared fiction of all? Money. Functions: store of value, medium of exchange, unit of account. Attributes: fungibility, portability, durability, cognizability, divisibility, and scarcity. Quote, money is not the root of all evil. Money is the root of all complex cooperation. End quote. Alex Svetsky. Money is the ultimate tool of human cooperation, and it's how we've created everything we see around us. When people tell me that it's just money, they truly don't get it. Money is your labor in measurable form. Without our ability to objectively and collectively agree on something to represent value, the entire world stops. This is why we need to take any reinvention of money seriously, and it's also why Bitcoin is such a big deal. The internet transformed the way we communicate and made information and data natively digital. The current monetary infrastructure has not yet taken that step. It's a digital veneer upon an analog system. This transformation is going to happen. It's no longer an if, but a when. And the best stack for a global monetary infrastructure is a digital one with a robust, secure foundation and layers of abstraction and complexity built on top. Remember, you can't build monuments on poor foundations. Money is fundamental to the societal stack, and as a result, it must be sound. If you enjoyed this section and would like to learn more, the following will help give you more context and a better understanding of how we've evolved, the role money played, and Bitcoin's potential place in society. A link to the article, Homo Sapiens, Evolution, Money, and Bitcoin, and a link to the article Why Bitcoin Matters. Acknowledgements. I want to give a special thanks to my team at Amber, who've been patient whilst we put this together, including Chantel De La Rey, who came up with the idea originally, and Ryan Neal for helping put the site together. As you may have gathered by now, at Amber, we're bullish on Bitcoin. In fact, we believe everyone should have some exposure to this new network and asset because we're confident it's the most incredible opportunity of our generation. Our mission at Amber is to make that exposure as simple, low risk, and as automated as possible. And we're doing that by taking the bad habit of spending all the time and transforming it into an option for the future. By investing the spare change from your daily purchases into an asset with extraordinary upside. If you'd like to find out more about what we're doing, feel free to reach out on any of the details below. Amber.app, at the Amber app on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn, or of course, on the App Store and in Google Play. Inspiration. We all stand on the shoulders of giants, and this paper would not be complete without a special thanks to all the brilliant minds that have helped inspire this line of thought, including but not limited to Andreas Antonopoulos, Murad Mamadov, Jimmy Song, Saifedean Amos, Nick Carter, Nassim Taleb, Giacomo Zucco, and many more. And of course, Satoshi Nakamoto. Whoever you are, thank you, and stay hidden. The end. This has been quite a journey, and a long few days for myself and the team. If you've come this far and read the entire paper, I just want to say thank you for the time you've dedicated to it. Time is our most precious resource, and its absolute scarcity is a big part of why we value it so much. I would argue that Bitcoin is the next most scarce resource, and I hope that by now you appreciate its importance as well. If not as much as I do, at least a lot more than you did before. Whilst this paper was not meant to be a scientifically detailed exposé on Bitcoin, it was meant to paint a picture, drive home a viewpoint, present a logical argument, and help open your mind to what might be the true zeitgeist of our time. I'll leave you with some final quotes from one of my favorite books, written by someone I consider the quintessential contrarian, along with some final quote-related thoughts for you to take away. Peter Thiel's 0-1. Quote, "Brilliant thinking is rare, but courage is in even shorter supply than genius." End quote. Quote, "Today's best practices lead to dead ends. The best paths are new and untried." End quote. End quote. "Every moment in business happens only once. The next Bill Gates will not build an operating system. The next Larry Page or Sergey Brin won't make a search engine. And the next Mark Zuckerberg won't create a social network. If you are copying these guys, you aren't learning from them." When you think about these three quotes, I hope you too can relate them back to the essence of this paper because, 1. It's the courageous who stand by Bitcoin and are willing to call it out as it is. They're also known as the stubborn, dedicated minority. 2. Today's banking and financial infrastructure is a best practice that will lead to what we have now. Going somewhere new will require a new path. And 3. Bitcoin was a 0-1 innovation. The moment already happened. Copying it and trying to make a better blockchain is pointless. The next wave of innovation will happen on top. That's where we all must go. Thank you. The Bitcoin Times editorial team. And that will close out Volume 1 of The Bitcoin Times by Alexander Svetsky and the Amber team. And there's actually a section that I did skip over right at the time, right at the end there, about the getting a limited edition hard copy, because it says it's coming in May 2019, and I'm pretty sure that is not available anymore. But I definitely encourage you to go check out, because I have not actually double checked on that. But they did have a printed limited edition, fixed supply, signed and barcoded copies of the Bitcoin Times. They'll be releasing 2 to 3 editions per this section, 2 to 3 editions of the Bitcoin Times every year. So in coming editions, they're going to include a lot of other people and writers and a lot of other great content. So if you want to check that out, the original, the place that all this is hosted is bitcointimes.news. And you can find them on Twitter at timelessbitcoin. That's the Twitter tag. I will have the links to all of this stuff, plus those other 2 articles, which I definitely recommend as well. Maybe we'll cover those on the show. I'm not sure. I've been through them in a while, so it would be good to go back over them. And I've got them saved in my list, so it may very well come back. However, this is already a crazy long episode, so I'm going to save my commentary on all this, because this is an incredibly thorough piece for being, one Bitcoin Times volume. I really want to hit a lot of fun commentary on it. So in doing so, we are going to save that for tomorrow. So don't forget to check back. Don't forget to subscribe to the show. Follow Alex Svetsky and then Timeless Bitcoin on Twitter. And you won't miss any of the newer editions that I'm pretty sure are on their way soon. So I'm really excited about it personally. And I'll have all of that available in the show notes and in the Twitter post. Make it easy for you guys. All right. Thank you so much. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy for more of the best in Bitcoin, all in audio, the audible of the Bitcoin and crypto economy space. That is me, the one man audio machine. And I'm Guy Swan, and I will catch you all next time. Thank you so much. Oh, and lastly, a shout out. I've had a number of new supporters, patrons to the show recently. Thank you. Thank you so much, guys. I've gotten like 4 or 5 very recently, one through Anchor and then another couple through Patreon. So thank you. Thank you so much. And if anybody else wants to help support the show, I would absolutely love it. It really means the world. If you want to promote something, if you're interested, if you got an interesting project or service that I could check out and you wanted to promote on the show, contact me at thecryptoeconomy@pm.me. And otherwise, if you want to be a patron and join our Telegram group, go to patreon.com/thecryptoeconomy and you'll be able to do that there. Again, thank you guys so much. Don't miss tomorrow's commentary on this awesome piece. And until then, take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.